excited for you to share about this. And it works really well to also talk about what you and DeLeon and your family are doing in this community. And so I'd like to pray for you, and we're really excited to have you share with us this evening. God, we thank you for our brother Brian and for his family. We are really excited to continue our support of them and have them as a part of our community, as they have been for the last number of years. I ask that you be with Brian as he shares with us his message, that we open ourselves for a way to align closer with the way that you would wish us to see your people in this world. And all these things we ask for you. Amen.
Okay, this thing keeps falling off. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right. Keep trying to clip it on my pocket, and it's giving me problems. So I thought I would start out by introducing us. I mean, we've been around for a while, and we kind of haven't been around for a while. But anyway, I wanted to give you a little bit of background. So the picture up here is actually key to our story, DeLeon and me. This is where we met, at the Black Sea, in a little town called Anapa, working in a summer camp in Russia in the summer of 1994. And I come from California and studied at San Diego State University. I studied business, and I joined the organization that we work for, which is called Novo, in 1988. Some of you were not born. I moved to Russia in the year 1991. It was still the Soviet Union when I moved there. I moved to Leningrad, which a couple months later became St. Petersburg once again. And I was there for about 7 years. 3 years after moving there, I met DeLeon. She's from South Africa. She studied at Pretoria Technical College. She studied acting and worked as an actress for a year, stage actress for a year, before moving to Russia. And we were both not supposed to be at this camp in 1994, and somehow we both ended up in this camp in 1994. It's a long story. But we met, and about, I don't know, 18 months later or so, we got married. So that was October 1995. We lived in Russia till 1998. We moved to South Africa, where we ended up running an apprenticeship for young leaders for about 10 years. We lived a total of 13 years in South Africa in her hometown of Pretoria North. And we worked there with the same organization, Novo. And then we moved here in 2011 and became part of Third Way at that time. DeLeon has served on staff for a little bit. I served on the leadership team for a couple of years. And we also have other jobs. She works for the Minnesota Historical Society, and I work for Delta Global Services at the airport with some other people here. And so that's kind of what our life looks like. So that's a little bit about us. So tonight I want to talk about God on mission. And I really believe God's got a missionary heart. The problem is I don't really like this word missionary. And I've actually used it around some people who I get a visceral reaction from people like, why would you want to make people missionaries? Because there's things that have happened in the life of missions since the time of Christ that have not been pretty. Colonization, subduing people, domination, forcing our culture on other cultures. But that is not what we're talking about tonight. I want to kind of redeem this word missionary, although I won't use it a lot, because I actually like the idea of being a sent one, which is basically the same idea, living on mission, being a sent one. And it's rather the idea of being a blessing and establishing the kingdom and the kingdom values of justice, love, forgiveness, reconciliation, and these type of things. So I just, whenever I use the word missionary, we are not talking about subduing or colonizing or any of the other ugly expressions that have happened over the lifetime of missions, but we're talking about that heart of God who's always been in pursuit of women and men, of humankind, right? He's always been pursuing and wanting all peoples to be blessed. So let's look at a few passages that reveal this heart. And I'm going to look up here because on my sheet, it's written very small, and I can't read it. So Genesis, I took a few verses out of the Old Testament, a few out of the New Testament, and one quote from Jesus. And so Genesis 12, the Lord said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will bless you and all the peoples of the earth." And in Genesis 26, 4, he says to Isaac, "I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. Through your offspring, all nations of the earth will be blessed." And I believe from the beginning, God just had this heart to bless, right? To bless all people, all nations. Then we see in Daniel, it's kind of obscure references maybe, but after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, Nebuchadnezzar declares, "There are no other gods. No other God can save this way." And in Daniel 6, Darius, king, declares that all will revere the God of Daniel. He is a living God. His kingdom will not be destroyed. He rescues and saves. Actually, supposed to say, he performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. So God revealing parts of himself, how he rescues, how he saves, signs, wonders. He's doing things. He's active, and he's revealing himself to people. Then in the New Testament, we can see in Matthew 24, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations." Now, the idea of the kingdom is really probably the most, the idea that Jesus talks about the most, this idea of his kingdom and establishes his kingdom on earth. And the gospel, really the proclamation of the gospel or the good news, is that proclamation that there is a new king, and this new king has a kingdom. That kingdom isn't of this earth. It's got all these other values that are actually probably countercultural to cultures that we know and our dominant culture. But he has a kingdom, and there's a king. And that's really what the word was, that proclamation of there is a new king. And that is the good news. There's this new king, and he is establishing his kingdom. So Mark 16, 15, "Go into all the world and preach the good news to all creation." Acts 1, 8, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." Acts 9, "But the Lord said to Ananias, 'Go, this man, Paul, is my chosen instrument to proclaim my name to the Gentiles and their kings and to the people of Israel.'" Good news for us. Goes beyond. You know, God's always had this interesting relationship with a people, so he can show that intimate kind of relationship, but he always has it for all the nations, right? I feel like there's always been like, I have my people, and that's where you see this unique relationship, but that relationship is available to all peoples, and that's why I love this verse, the Gentiles. We get included in this beautiful relationship. Revelation 7, 9, "After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb." So once again, this idea again of all the nations being present, people from all peoples, all nations. And then this is probably the mission that Jesus was on. I love this quote because it gets to maybe a little more specifics of some of the things that are true about this kingdom, right? So Luke 4, 16 through 21, this is just after he's gone through the desert experience for 40 days. He goes to his hometown, and he goes into Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And on a Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah 61, this is the portion that we know, was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down, and the eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, "Today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." So I'm the fulfillment of this. This is here now. This kingdom is being ushered in now. This is what we see. And what are some specifics that we see in here? The good news is just not for the wealthy, it's for the poor. God's heart for the poor. Freedom for prisoners. Recovery of sight for the blind. The miraculous. To set the oppressed free. Justice. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Jubilee. Really, the year of Jubilee. And that sense of where all things are made right. And all debts are canceled. And this kind of kingdom is being ushered in. This kind of kingdom where everybody is being looked out for. That's what's being ushered in. And so this is God's heart. And I feel like those verses are great and they're a real big part of God's heart. But I also feel like God has a dream. And it's right in line with his mission. So God has been active. He's been on mission. We talk a lot about missional communities and things like that today, but God has always been a God of mission. He's always been on purpose to go to reveal himself to all peoples. And his dream to renew, restore, and reconcile all things to himself. Now, this comes from friends of mine at the Parish Collective, and they use this a lot where they talk about God has a dream for your neighborhood to renew, restore, and reconcile all things to himself. So, how do you see God's dream becoming a reality in your neighborhood? I love that idea that God has a dream. God has a dream for this Hamlin Midway neighborhood. God has a dream for your neighborhood. God has a dream for our city, even for our nation, to renew, restore, and reconcile all things to himself. N.T. Wright, I think, puts it very nicely. He says, so the long story of God's plan to put things right, starting with Abraham, climaxing in Jesus and the Spirit, and looking ahead to the new heavens and the new earth, isn't the story of guilty humans being forgiven so that they can go to heaven, but of idolatrous, and yes, therefore guilty humans, being rescued in order to be worshipers and workers in God's restoration movement, God's kingdom project. So God invites us into this restoration movement that he has began. This kingdom project. I don't know, somewhere along the lines we have whittled the gospel down to a very truncated gospel that believe in Jesus, go to heaven. But Jesus came and said, I'm ushering in this beautiful kingdom. That's part of it, but that's not the fullness. I'm here to reconcile all things to myself. I'm here to reconcile all peoples to myself. And all things, all of creation. So when we began to think about what does this look like? How do we do this? How do we join in to God's restoration project? So the next slide, I feel like God has really called us to be a faithful presence. I like this term because it first of all, talks about being it has the idea of being faithfully present to God and faithfully present to one another. And not just one another here, but to one another outside these walls as well. And I like that idea of being faithfully present because it takes on a different connotation for us. The primary goal is not the production of outcomes. So we don't go out to fix the world. We don't go out to proselytize and make people believe what we believe. We go out into the brokenness of the world to bring healing to the world, right? To be healing, faithful presence in the world. Now, salvation is part of that. That's a fullness of a healing, right? And that's a spiritual healing. But it's not the only fullness of that. And that can look a thousand different ways in our neighborhood and in our cities. Faithful submission to the triune God and faithful action toward one another in the present. So this requires us to be listening, right? It requires us to be listening because in our situation, in our neighborhoods, in our places where we live, we have to be aware in every situation of the nuances. Every situation is different. And when we know the context, we know the neighborhood, when we know the place where we're rooted, then we can begin to get a better sense of what are those nuances. And We're listening for what the relationships around us require of us and what is our capacity to move towards others. We don't have the capacity to do everything, but what is God calling us to? What are the things that God has for us here in this context? So to be faithfully listening, faithfully present to others, it means we can't hold ourselves up away from the world, and we don't just barge into the world and try to make everybody look and act and think like us, but it's moving into the world as a healing, faithful presence, bringing the shalom of God into the world. And so I like this idea of, in each situation, we are a community of faithful practice, listening to our context together. What is God doing? And what is the Spirit calling us to do? What is God doing? What is the Spirit calling us to do? And that's what we're listening. And that's what we want to be faithful to. So that maybe not for you, but for me, that strikes me a lot better than a lot of times when I hear about missions or I hear about evangelism or outreach or other things. It can have almost this connotation of, we got to go tell people stuff, and we got to go, you know, get in some pretty uncomfortable situations. But when we talk about being a healing presence in the world, when we talk about being a faithful presence, we might have difficult conversations. We might have things that are difficult situations that we step into, but we're stepping into them in a whole different fashion. We're stepping into them with the shalom, the bringing the fullness, the justice, the reconciliation, the forgiveness. We're entering in relationship. This is a relational view of the world, not a transactional view of the world. And I think that's a huge difference in being a faithful presence. So this is, I feel like this is what God is calling us to, but at the same time, what our team and what we are hoping to see within the church, I think it will take some shifts. And so we see five different ways that the church needs to shift to begin to live more as a faithful presence. So our first one, and this is interesting because this comes back to the question I asked Adam at the gathering we had here where we all threw questions at him. I asked him, how are we going to live out being a blessing in the neighborhood? And I liked his answer. I liked it a lot. Matter of fact, it gave me a lot of hope. Because I don't know if you remember, he said, like, I've come in churches that I've been a part of where I've brought an outreach of some type that I've brought to the congregation, but oftentimes people didn't get excited about it or didn't go anyplace. I actually feel like we need to understand what is the calling on each person's life and help them to live into that calling. That is what we're talking about here. Moving from a centralized mission to a decentralized mission. Now, what's nice, the hearing that he's affirmed, this is the hardest shift for most pastors to make because it requires giving up some authority and responsibility. And that's not easy for pastors. So we should be grateful that Adam has this bent in him already, that, you know, that we need to help people understand the call that God has on each of our lives and the passion and desires that he's put within us and help people live into that, into the world. Instead of always the church bringing something and come join this thing that the church is doing, we are empowering you to do the very thing that God has gifted and created you to do. And so that's a huge shift. And I think that's really where it all has to start, is that movement away from this kind of centralized thinking to decentralized. The second part is moving from culturally relevant to culturally prophetic. Now, that may sound daunting, but it's not really. It's basically, we are called to be transforming of the culture, not being transformed by the culture. Unfortunately, many churches today trying to be culturally relevant, actually trying to attract people through that cultural relevance, where I feel like God has called us to be living this kingdom life if you look in Acts 2, Acts 4, they're living a kind of life that other people are going, they're taking care of everybody. They're sharing meals together. They're in each other's houses every day. They're studying the Word every day. They're having communion every day. There's a life that they'd created for themselves that was prophetic. It was a kind of life that was lived out, and others saw that life and said, there's something different about these people. It seems like we've gone the other way today in culture, and we have tried to make our churches more like the world so people will feel comfortable here. Not that we're trying to make people feel uncomfortable, but we're trying to give them a vision for what could be as well, right? So to be a culturally prophetic culturally prophetic community. And one thing I want to say about that is, this is how we say it on our team. We want to be a community of resistance and recovery to the dehumanizing values of our dominant culture. We want to be a community of resistance and recovery to the dehumanizing values of our dominant culture. So we also want to move from creating members to creating missionaries or creating sent ones. So this shift is what Alan Hirsch, the author Alan Hirsch, might call the missional impulse. How do we disciple people to live as sent ones in their everyday life? How do we disciple people towards that goal? If we make the goal of making more members, unfortunately, what that does is that oftentimes makes us an attractional church, right? We're trying to attract people to this thing that we're doing, where the church has always been sent out into the world. Oftentimes, churches will try to attract people in to make their churches bigger, to gain more people, to create more members. Well, actuality, when we are sent out, when we have that as our focus, we actually tend to grow because we're impacting the world and we're bringing transformation to those who live in the neighborhoods and cities around us. There's also, with the attractional churches, by attracting people in, they tend to only reach people who are very, very similar to themselves, which I also see as a problem for the church. So the paradox, once again, is just that the more we live in that sense of being sent ones into the world, the more we will actually see our churches probably grow. But in the right way, you know, for the right reasons, I suppose. And so a fourth shift would be from educating the head to transforming the heart. Educating the head isn't wrong unless we are only educating the head. Education of the head is important, but that has to move to transforming of the heart. Because in the transformation of the heart is where we begin to learn how to live as a new creation, where we begin to live as kingdom citizens. So that shift from teaching to the head to the transformation of the heart also requires that we move from knowledge about God to an experiencing of God. Moving from a knowledge of God to experiencing of God. And so when we think about spending time with God, and we do this much in our team by centering and reflective prayer, and our team commits to 30 minutes an hour of day of spending in contemplative, reflective prayer. In that time with God, there's a transformation that happens in me that is vital if I ever desire to actually live the kind of life I hope to live. If I want to live as a sent one, if I want to live into that, it requires me going deep in union with God in my inward life. And then the last shift is from church growth to kingdom impact. So what we would call kingdom impact might be kingdom transformation to the world. And that's what we've been called to bring transformation to the world, not to grow big churches. But again, funny enough, if that is our hope to really have kingdom impact in the communities and cities where we are located, then our churches will probably grow. But we do need new metrics to determine how healthy our churches are, right? Because just determining by how many people are sitting in our pews is not a great determination of how healthy we are as a church. So we need new metrics to begin to determine, how do we determine how healthy we are? How deep our people are in Christ and how they're living this out in the world? So how do we find these new metrics to actually determine how we are? And kingdom impact happens when the values of Shalom community, justice, freedom, reconciliation, restoration, and forgiveness are evident. That's when kingdom impact happens. When the values of a Shalom community, justice, freedom, reconciliation, restoration, and forgiveness are taking place. Where we begin to see those things happening, then we are seeing kingdom impact. So that's what we as a team have really, what we're hoping to do in the local church and with local churches, help them make these shifts that will actually move their focus, maybe what we might call an inward focus, to more of an outward focus into the lives around them, into the communities around them. And so I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the work that we do. And we work with an organization called NOVO. It was called Church Resource Ministries for about 38 years. And this January, we changed the name to NOVO. But NOVO is about 500 people working in about 90 countries around the world. And are sent to multiply movements of the gospel and to mobilize the church for mission. So gospel movements, if you're not familiar, these are things that are happening in the Middle East, in China, and other places where literally thousands of small churches off the grid, underground church kind of stuff is happening that the world probably doesn't even realize is going on. Where there's a vast movement of the gospel taking and captivating cultures, and you probably don't even hear about it all that much. But that's what we're talking about, a movement of a gospel. Right now, probably the hotspot in the world is the Middle East. And China has historically been one of those places as well, where the church has been growing by astronomical numbers, but it's all been underground and very small. Mobilizing the church for mission is kind of the more the side that our team is focused on. So within our organization, we have three different collectives of teams, as we call them. I'll start from the right. Ethne is really being called to a people group. So ethne is what we would have been a part of when we were living in Russia. We were called to walk alongside the church in Russia as the church found its feet after communism, to walk alongside a people group in a context, in a very specific context. And that can be in the States as well. Somebody could be called to Karen people in the States and live here and work with refugees. So it's not just overseas, but it's more that focus of a people group. Interchange is incarnation among the poor. Our interchange teams are mostly outside the United States, but there are a few within the United States, like San Francisco and trying to think of where the other few are, Los Angeles, and they've been in Miami, New York, other places, Philadelphia. Those teams incarnate and live amongst the urban poor to, again, walk alongside the church, empowering leaders, strengthening the church by walking and living amongst in very hard places, in big cities within our nation. We also have a team, an interchange team in Minneapolis, in the Phillips neighborhood. Church Next is a group of specialized teams, and so our team would fall underneath Church Next within our organization, and our team is called Rewire. I'll tell you a little bit more about our team. So Rewire, all that we do in Rewire is really to get at two things: to move the church into deep intimacy with the triune God and deep engagement with the suffering of the world. We feel like these things cannot live outside of one another. And this is actually, when we talk about the church being missional, we're talking about it's grounded in this deep inward life that's lived in an outward way. We do this by helping churches to create kingdom outposts. And a kingdom outpost is, it would be any group of highly committed people that are a healing presence to the broken places of the world. So say our the group that's working with Esther, what's it called, Esther Holmes, when we were working with the Corinne refugee family, these type of things, that you might call that a missional community where they have a focus of a shared mission together, and they're learning how to live into that mission, learning how to live into that together, and individually living out that call in their life. So it's a highly committed group of people that gathers for encouraging and knowing and strengthening and learning together, but also they have as focus a particular mission that's on their heart and they feel called to. So that would be a kingdom outpost. So we help churches to establish kingdom outposts within their churches, places of being missionally engaged in the broken places of our cities. And so how do we do that? We have a process that's called Deep Waters. Deep Waters is basically a deep spiritual formation process. We call it missional spiritual formation. It's spiritual formation and that sense of mission tied together, right? Those two things, intimacy with Jesus, engaging the brokenness of our world. Spiritual formation, mission. And we do this in three different contexts right now. So the first context is a missional leader cohort. This is where we take pastors, and we just finished one of these this last January. We had a group of pastors from the Twin Cities join us for the last 2 years. And we basically take them through the Deep Waters process. The Deep Waters process is a one-year process that pastors can lead their congregations through. But we actually took the pastors through that process over a two-year period, not only helping them to understand it, but helping them to understand it at a level that they would be able to lead their churches through it as well. So they were engaging it, they were doing a lot of reading, they were doing a lot of practical things between our cohort meetings every 6 months. And so we do that for a two-year process with them. Mission houses, I'll skip to the right side. Mission houses is for 20-somethings. We're trying to get one of these started in St. Paul right now. We're recruiting that way. It's really for 20-somethings, and it's the same curriculum, that Deep Waters curriculum, but it's they serve 10 to 15 hours a week with an indigenous ministry in an under-resourced neighborhood, to where the real goal is to create a solidarity with the poor and marginalized, so that that is something they grow to love and also to live into, that will affect hopefully the rest of their life and the decisions they make. The last thing that we do are beyond classes. And beyond classes, they're really there to create a holy angst in people, right? And I'll show you the classes in just a second, what the different classes are. But those classes are just to stir up within people the desire for this kind of growth and engagement, so that they might enter into that Deep Waters process, which is really a discipleship process towards this spiritual formation, the deep inward life and the deep outward life. And so, again, it's kind of an on-ramp. And we usually find that when people go through one or two of these beyond classes, they often are ready or asking if they can go through that year-long Deep Waters process, which is that discipleship process. So these are the classes that we offer in our beyond classes. And these aren't the golden classes to end all classes. These are the seven that we have at this point. The first one is call, really discovering your call in community and understanding the call and passion that God has put within you. Caring for the poor, really the road to solidarity with the poor. It's really challenging people on seeing the poor and marginalized differently and engaging that world in a spirit of solidarity. Life in the kingdom is really about how do we live this life together in community of the kingdom, living out these kingdom values together. Cultural captivity, our dominant culture, we all grow up with a dominant culture. Oftentimes we don't even understand how much that affects the way we see the world. And so it's really helping us to have eyes to see that and also to break free from that dominant culture, that we can really live in kingdom in the kingdom culture and kingdom values. And so centered living is really more of the contemplative, reflective life and helping people to deepen that part of their life. And then the character of a change agent is based on Martin Luther King's sermons and writings, and it's understanding how are we a change agent within the communities where we live. So these are the classes that we offer. They're 10 weeks each, and those hopefully lead to this deeper process of entering into deep waters. So the key elements of the areas that I list up here in these classes, the key areas, they really are to spark this kind of missionary zeal in our lives, right? I mean, that's the whole desire behind this, is to kind of spark that missionary zeal in distinct and discernible patterns of living. So to inflame, the one song we sang tonight talked about inflaming our hearts, to inflame that zeal within us, but in ways that are actually distinct and discernible patterns of life, that we can actually live this out in practical ways into our world. So it's not just some nice theory, but it's helping people to really live a kingdom life. And that's our heart. So tonight, I just want to leave you with this. Much of what we do is based on helping people understand their call and God's call on their life and how he's created them and the passion that he's given them and the desires he's given them. And so Frederick Buechner has a great quote. It says, "The place that God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." And so as I finish tonight, I just want you to take maybe 30 seconds to think about that. Where is that place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet? Take that. Danae and John will come up in a minute to close this out.